Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marcia Joyner with Betrayed by Hospice. I would like to thank everyone who called in. We've had a couple of glitches lately, and we appreciate you standing by with us, and hopefully you have notified other people to call in. The reason that we do these shows is to warn people that the hospice you once heard of is not the same hospice that exists today. People who have had compassionate care over the years with their loved ones is not what all of us experience. Many of our guest speakers have lost loved ones who were cruelly murdered. Their death was hastened by being sedated with opioids and antipsychotic drugs until they died from the drugs, starvation, and dehydration. A few of the drugs, let me just name them, is morphine, Ativan, Haldol, Seroquel, fentanyl, and methadone. The last days of their life are taken from the patient and from their family members. The reason that I do this talk show is almost 2 years ago this month, my mom was cruelly murdered in hospice in Georgia. And it took my sister and me 6 months to find out that her case wasn't unique because my dad had been the chaplain at that one facility. So we thought it had to be related to that. They wanted to get rid of my mom so that she didn't wear my dad down. That's when we ran across Hospice Patient Alliance. Ron Panzer is the founder of that. And that's when we found out that our situation wasn't unique. Other people have also died, and it happens every day. We do the show to let you know that you don't have to let your family members be given these drugs. If you object to them, then you can tell the doctor don't give them to them. And you need to Google everything and do not trust that they are telling you the truth, because the majority of times, they're not. There may be some good hospices out there. We're not aware of which ones they are. Most of the people that contact me and contact Ron Panzer have had really bad experiences with that. So that's why we do this show, to tell you that you have rights, you have options, and you need to look for the red flags. And there are resources, and I'm happy to provide those to you. I pulled a quote from our previous guest, Dr. Maurice Godwin's website by author Schopenhauer, that I believe is appropriate for where we as a whole are trying to be pushed into accepting. It is, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepted as being self-evident. So I think that's what they're pushing us into, is to just accepting that people get old and they're going to die and we should just end their life sooner than it is their time or it's God's time. Tonight, I am very happy to have Pastor Joey Faust on as our guest speaker. And he has been so patient with us as we've had a couple of issues with getting on and with some audio issues last week. He's been a pastor for 25 years, and he's currently the pastor at Long Run Baptist Church in Missouri. He is the author of several books on Christian history. He's a researcher with a particular interest in national health issues, and he has a national health blog at kjv.health. I went to that webpage, and it has a ton of really cool information about food, vitamins, herbs, tea, health issues, and natural ways to have a healthier body. So I highly recommend that to any of our listeners to check that out. I was actually shocked that it had so much information in it. But I digress. That is not why I asked him to come tonight. Pastor Joey Faust, his aunt, Judy, was under hospice care in 2012. and he witnessed what many of us have seen firsthand with hospice hastening the death of our loved ones. After this, he became focused on finding out just what he had witnessed, and through his research, he documented an excellent YouTube on hospice and morphine. When I ran across that YouTube, I knew he would be a perfect guest to share his findings with us. Many of the people don't believe us when we tell them what happened to our loved ones, and they think that we're emotional, we're just grieving, we're trying to find somebody to blame. So maybe hearing from other people, we've had doctors on the show, a forensic scientist, and tonight we have a pastor who may open someone's ears and they will heed the warning. We can't do any more than just warn people by what's happened to us. And I will be putting Pastor Faust's audio listed down in the comments, but you can find it by Googling Hospice Hell, The Dangers of Morphine, Watch Before Saying Yes to Hospice. And like I said, I'll put that down at the comments so you can find that. Pastor Faust previously worked on a documentary with Sofnik Turn titled Beyond Off-Grid. The documentary that they're currently working on is Hospice Holocaust, Healthcare Tyranny, and the Medical Death Culture. They're in the beginning stages of raising support and collecting stories from people who have lost loved ones to hospice euthanasia. He also works with Ron Panzer, who is a hospice nurse and the founder of Hospice Patient Orgs, who was on our talk show in April and gave us a lot of information. So, Pastor Faust, I'd like to turn it over to you, and if you would talk to us about your experience with Aunt Judy in 2012 that started you on this mission.
Well, hi, Marcia. What a blessing to be here, and we do pray that many would be alerted to what is happening, this death culture, and so many are unaware. And I certainly was. We had been involved in the pro-life movement for many years. And when my aunt got sick, and we heard she had cancer, and we then finally heard that she was being sent home, it was almost a relief that, okay, now she can maybe get some natural healing and be off some of the dangerous cancer drugs, and I'm just showing you how I felt at the time. And so when we got there to South Carolina and I walked in, it was like looking at a Nazi concentration camp victim. She had been dehydrated, starved, and I didn't understand it at the time. A nervous hospice worker kept coming in and out, smoking cigarettes and going out, coming in, going out, and looked very nervous, looking at her watch. And she would basically say, she looks uncomfortable, and she needs more morphine. And I was just watching this whole thing. I heard one relative say, well, doesn't that make it harder to breathe? And the worker said, well, it can, but it can also make it easier. And I just watched as they continued giving morphine, and pretty soon the breathing stopped. And I walked away, and I just said, I just watched a murder. And I knew there had to be others out there that understood, that were aware that this is occurring. And, of course, I immediately started researching, and I found a Ron Panzer and his excellent book on stealth euthanasia and his resources. And then that Friday, when I got to Fort Worth, we have a street preaching ministry where we hand out tracts and that type of thing. Another preacher walked up to me and gave me a newsletter and says, Pastor Joey, do you know that they're murdering people with hospice? I couldn't believe it. I was like, yes, I just watched this. So it's amazing sometimes when your eyes are open, then God sends you to others that can encourage you and help you understand and be validated in what you see.
Absolutely. And I think what you're saying that happened with your Aunt Judy, and in the detail, there was it's so identical to what the rest of our listeners and our guest speakers have talked about that they've heard with their loved ones. I mean, the words are almost identical, and it's like you were saying that she says, well, let's just give her more morphine. And, you know, you did a lot of research on what morphine does to the respiratory system.
Oh, so I have seen, I've heard from so many that have gone through this. It's happening everywhere, and we've heard a lot of, and I'm sure you have too, testimony after testimony that this has occurred.
Mm-hmm. Every day. And in 1889 is when it was determined that death occurs from paralysis of the respiratory system. So when you give somebody morphine and they already have a compromised system, you know, what is naturally going to occur?
That's right. In fact, if you go back to the 19th century, and sometimes you have to do that to get, but we have medical reports coming all the way up that show that it is a respiratory inhibitor, depressor. And they even said in the 19th century, don't give morphine to older, elderly people. Well, that goes,
mm-hmm.
Now they're giving it to everybody that's elderly or, you know, any pain. And they are slowing down the breathing, and it's a way for them to kill. They're not going to call it killing, but it's a way for them to kill without calling it murder. And let me give you an example. In the news, a lot of people are aware that you have the 17-year-old Dutch girl. And a lot of news sites were reporting 17-year-old Dutch girl euthanized at her home. She said she had been raped as a young girl, and it made her feel that she couldn't continue to live. Well, we know in the Netherlands that children as young as 12 can opt for euthanasia. What a horrible thing. Well, what's happening now is that news sites are reporting, like New York Mag, the Intelligencer, is saying, what does this false euthanasia story tell us about the Christian right? So they're saying she wasn't euthanized. It's not what happened, they say. It says she died in a palliative care at home. She just simply was stopped eating and stopped drinking. And they don't say whether she was given morphine or whatever. I'm sure she was. So they go on and say it was a form of suicide, but it was not a killing. Now, wait a second. They're admitting it's a form of suicide, but they don't want to call it a killing. And now what happens if this is happening to your loved ones? So see, we're playing with words. Abortion now is a woman's whole health clinic. It's not called an abortion mill or a baby killing factory. And in the same way, they don't want to call this a killing. They don't want to call it a murder. It's just a form of suicide. And but if your grandmother or your aunt or your mother is being killed in this fashion, why don't you call it murder? Why don't you call it killing? That's what it is. And I don't understand. You have in the news now all over about this Ohio doctor that is in trouble because he's been caught giving morphine or whatever it is to patients, and they died. So over and over again, some of these doctors get caught. Are they not aware that this is happening every single day?
And how many people knew about that and never questioned it? I mean, we're not talking about something that happened over a two-week period of time. I mean, this went on for a long time, and people were dying within minutes of him administering high doses of fentanyl. Why did it take so long for them to see this? Is it because we are being conditioned to look at elderly people as disposable? They've lived their life. It's time for them to go.
That's exactly what it is. It is the slippery slope that many have been warning about for years. In fact, I find it very interesting that they are even admitting now, and people are coming out and saying, you know, the Christian right, or let me give you this article in the National Review. This is just a few days ago. The pro-lifers were right all along. Historian Robert J. Lifton's thesis in The Nazi Doctors is that there was an inevitable progression from the medicalization of killing introduced by the Nazis in voluntary euthanasia campaign in the 30s to the mass murder in the camps in the 40s. So see where we're at right now. We are now entering this stage of involuntary euthanasia. What follows after that is death camps. And that may sound crazy, but we have to learn from history. We have to see where we are at. They go on to say, at the heart of the Nazi enterprise, Lifton states, is the destruction of the boundary between healing and killing. For example, the lead prosecutor against Dr. Kevorkian believes that the participation by a doctor in killing, even if it's a voluntary suicide, is the first step in this dangerous continuum, a slippery slope leading from a medically assisted suicide to medically encouraged suicide, to medically pressured suicide, to finally involuntary euthanasia. And then that's going to lead finally to genocide or the murder of anybody that they believe are against the state or undesirable or worthless or not worthy of life. So
exactly.
And they're pointing out that, okay, as we look at this situation with the Dutch girl, it's time for us now to consider where we're at. Several thousand Americans have died from deliberately ingesting, deliberately prescribed drugs designed to end their lives. We need to learn from what happened in the days of the Nazis. And you know, as a pastor and as a Christian, there was a revival of occultism, a revival of paganism in the 20s in Germany. And I believe that that contributed to a culture of death. And when you see this paganism that is reviving all across the land, we're losing our Christian moral values and the respect for life. And that is very, very dangerous. We are in a dangerous situation today.
I can remember reading back on about Anne Frank. You know, that was the big story that people read about. You know, as a child, you would read that, and that's kind of your introduction into the Nazi and, you know, the persecution of the Jews and the gas chambers. And I remember thinking how long it was before the United States got involved in that and stopped Hitler. I mean, that went on for years, and millions of people were murdered in gas chambers. And we looked at that, and we said, that's so horrible. Why didn't we do something? How did this go on? And now I look at what is happening today, and I believe we just had the ninth state, Maine, I believe, that came in and is, you know, approving assisted suicide. Well, assisted suicide is going on in 8 states now, in the United States, and in those states where that is going on, as well as the states where it has not been approved, we're euthanizing people, and it is totally being ignored. People don't believe it's happening. I get a little frustrated that the churches are not standing up in their congregation and preaching it and telling them, you know, if you're going to preach on, you know, that abortion is wrong and pro-life, then you have to look at pro-life for the elderly. You can't just decide that it's time for their, you know, their time to go because they're not working now because they are draining resources.
That's the next step, of course. You see how abortion, so-called, has progressed from it's just a fetus to, which fetus just means infant, but it was a way of hiding that it's a life. Well, now you have so many politicians and so many abortion advocates saying, oh, yes, it's a baby, and we believe in partial birth abortion. We believe in killing the baby right outside the womb. So notice that slippery slope. And it's interesting, Maine has the oldest average state population. So you see what's happening is it is a way of so-called euthanizing the elderly, and it's disrespect for life. When you mentioned the Nazis, I was thinking of the fact that before it was all fully manifested, there were only whispers that there's a conspiracy. They began to whisper that we believe the weak, we believe that there's a genocide that is occurring. And even men around the world, people around the world, in the U.S., they were denying that it was occurring. A great famous preacher named D.M. Panton in Britain, he had a Christian magazine, and he began to expose the pagan underpinnings of Nazi Germany, and he began to call alarm. He began to tell everybody that genocide is occurring. They're killing people. And for so long, nobody wanted to believe it, see. But then afterwards, it was undeniable. And people began to scratch their heads and say, how did this happen? Well, I don't think we've learned the lesson. I don't think we've learned the power of propaganda and the power that they have. Hitler studied Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud. They studied propaganda and how to use it, how to mock and laugh and make people that are telling the truth appear so ignorant. And they use that intimidation, and that's how it was done.
That's exactly right, the intimidation, because that's what happens in the hospice facility and in some hospitals. And as you said with your Aunt Judy, that the lady kept looking at her watch, you know, let's give her more morphine. I believe you had said she turned her on her side.
I'm not sure. I can't remember. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. But, that's one of the things they do. They turn them on their side. They're uncomfortable, and they start moaning a little bit. And then they say, well, they're in pain. We need to give them something for pain. And I know in my mom's case, my sister and I did not want them to give her the morphine and the Ativan, and we had stopped that at one point. And they would come in and say, she's in pain. Look, she's raising her eyebrows. Look, she raised her hand. Look, she moaned. Didn't you hear her? She's in pain. We need to give her something for pain. And we fought back on that and pushed back on it until finally they convinced us that she was in pain. And the morphine toxicity or morphine poisoning has some of the same symptoms that an individual would have if they were in true pain. So they are actually causing the reaction and then telling you that's pain and then making you feel guilty if you don't let them do something. And the intimidation starts in of them, you know, telling you, you don't know what you're talking about, and this is pain. Later, when I read my mom's medical records, it states in there several conversations that the nurses had with us where the way that they come across and what they say is, daughter says she doesn't care if mother is in pain. Daughter says, so what? If she's in pain, so what? And those were not ever things that were said. What we said is we wanted her to be lucid so we could take her home. But you see how they write it, the nurses write it, as though, oh, well, we're telling the daughters that the mother's in pain, but they're saying we don't care. So that it makes you look like you're an uncaring child, you don't care if your mom's in pain. And that's what they do in the hospital, in the hospice settings, with the children, the spouses, nephews, nieces, whatever. They tell you that this is what they're doing, and if you don't go along with what they're saying and their intimidation, they try to make you feel guilty about it, like you're not doing what's the best interest of the patient.
Yes.
We
and then sometimes
them.
And sometimes you have relatives that really want. You have in the news, I believe, recently, a Portuguese woman who they say killed her mother and gave too much morphine, is what they say. And they quoted the daughter who was saying, well, if we don't give enough morphine, she's just going to linger around. She's stubborn. So it's her time to go, so she needs to go ahead and go, and so I'm going to up the amount of morphine. Well, she's just speeding up. So how often is this occurring? How often are doctors, how often are family members, how often is everybody joining together? Everybody profits some degree, somehow, in some of these situations. They might receive an inheritance, whatever the situation is. And so everybody's in town. They want to go ahead and have the person die while all the relatives are in town. They don't want to fly back to Boston or wherever they're at. So it's a way of getting this thing over with. And I believe that's why the hospice worker was looking at her watch. She knew that this is what we're going to do. We have scheduled this for now, and all the family is here. And it's a way of causing death to occur. And they might justify it in their mind by saying, well, they were going to die anyway. But none of us can predict when somebody's going to die. And we don't have any right to play God anyway. A diagnosis is not a definitive time statement. A person can die sooner or they can live many years beyond. And there's many with terminal illnesses or severe conditions that have led productive, quality lives.
And that's true. And a lot of them, I believe, are put into hospice because it is a money-making situation, whether or not they say that it's a nonprofit. That's not true. And they are put into those even when they have things like COPD. And my mom had congestive heart failure. They come up with these things. That is not a 6 months, you're going to die in 6 months. Those diseases, if you will, are treatable by medication. And what is I've seen and heard happen is that when they go into the hospice environment, they stop giving them their LASIK if they need that, or their blood pressure medicine, or, you know, respiratory medication for a COPD. Of course,
They stop giving them water eventually.
Well, they do because they become where they can't even talk. They can't swallow a pill. They can't talk.
So they justify
they can't think
it, yeah.
rationally. They can't eat, and they dehydrate them. And you hear it over and over again, but you're absolutely right about there are family members. We've had guests on our show where a spouse has murdered her husband. And, you know, the daughter's very, very upset about that, and she knows that her dad was murdered. She can't prove it, even though she has medical records that show that, and everything that was said along the way, she's got proof of that. But attorneys don't take those cases because I believe we are trying to be conditioned to just accept this. They're old. They're going to die, so let's just get it over with. And what people don't seem to realize with the baby boomers, there are a lot of people that are coming down the line that are starting to get a little bit older, a little bit slower. Maybe they're not working full-time jobs. And you are, I don't mean you specifically, but we're all at a risk of becoming that person who is elderly.
That's right.
It's going to happen to all of us. Did you have, I don't know that I've asked you this, if you've seen the movie Soylent Green?
When I was young, I did, yeah.
With Charlton Heston?
Yeah.
You should rewatch that because there's a shocking resemblance of where we're heading. Recently, I read that, and I don't remember the state, but there is one state now that has come up with a ruling that it's okay to take bodies and use them as fertilizer.
I read that.
Human body.
That's exactly right. Yes, yes.
Right.
Well, so they're already, a lot of people don't even know, they're already taking bathroom waste and making fertilizer out of that, you know, or organic st- stipulates that if something is organic, you're not allowed to use this bio dung or whatever you want to call it. But they're already using sewer as a way to fertilize food that is not organic. So this is just taking it to the next step. Wow.
Right. But, I mean, how could you sit there and just very calmly talk about, like this article was saying, you know, you can take your loved one and have your loved one with you all the time and bury them in your backyard. I'm like, why? Mm. I mean, to my knowledge, that is illegal to take a pet in most places and to bury your beloved pet in your backyard.
Well,
it used to be anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think we're being pushed into believing that human life does not matter, your time is over, and you need to go. And what people need to realize is that everybody needs to stand up and say, no, I don't agree with this, and I'm not going to just stand and say it's okay, because it's not okay.
It's
and you
not
have to
going
protect
to be
your loved ones.
It's not going to be just the elderly. And, of course, others are being euthanized, and that's going to continue and become more accepted with the stealth euthanasia. But even in Canada, it's saying, according to the National Post, that 3 years after assisted death became legal in Canada, the medical community is now debating a provocative question. Should organs be removed from consenting euthanasia patients while they're still alive? They say organ donation after euthanasia is already occurring. But see, they're playing with words. As you know, if they're brain dead, they're still alive. So they're already taking organs from people, vital organs from people that are already alive. But now they're saying if you're in hospice, we're going to go ahead and take your organs, you know, while we are so-called euthanizing you. Amazing.
I had not heard that, but are you saying the same thing as they call assisted suicide, which we're kind of calling euthanasia? Are you saying it's on the victims that go in and opt for assisted suicide?
Yes, they're calling it, they're saying they are consenting to it, but they're saying while they are still alive, you know. They've already embraced, you know, basically they're taking them historically from what they call brain dead, which we know is not dead. There's a doctor today, a famous neurologist, I believe, in the news that is telling everybody this is a myth. You know, you can just Google brain death myth. And that's in the news today, and many have sounded the alarm that this is just a way of fueling this billion-dollar organ industry. But what they're saying here is, so if they consent to euthanasia, we're going to go ahead and take your organs while you're still alive. And they've even embraced now donation after circulatory death. So see, we're playing with this word death, and we're getting into some scary situations here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We are crossing a line that you can't go back from. So, but
I believe we really need
to.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I just want to say that, and how do I put this? I do not condone assisted suicide. I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is if someone makes a conscious decision, and I believe that there's always something around, you know, that you can do to help. I don't know. I've never felt suicidal. But I'm saying that if somebody goes in and they say, yes, I want assisted suicide. I've thought about the repercussions. I know what this is going to do. And you're saying, well, if you take these pills, handful or injection or however they do it, if you do this, you will not wake up in 30 minutes. You will be gone. I'm saying that's a conscious choice, whether it's right or wrong. I'm not making that judgment. That's a conscious choice that somebody makes. Now, to go in and remove their organs, to me, is a horrible, horrible thing because you're still alive and you don't know that they don't feel any pain. And I mean, what a horrible thing to do. But they make a conscious decision to do that. The euthanasia, as I see that, euthanasia is more like what Ron Panzer says with stealth euthanasia, that they're doing it right in front of you, but you don't know they're doing it. So there, it, to me, is a small difference between assisted suicide and someone that's being euthanized and given these drugs, and they have no idea that that's what you're doing to them. I'm not saying
is
right. Yeah.
Oh, no,
but
that
I'm saying
is
there's
the slippery
a difference
slope.
Between the two. Right.
Well, there, that's the slippery slope into involuntary euthanasia.
Correct.
And so, you know, I believe as a Christian in the Bible, you have a Job. We heard of the terrible experiences that he went through. And he says, my flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My days are spent without hope. My eyes shall see no more good, so that my soul chooseth strangling and death rather than life. That's how he felt. But he did not kill himself. It says in James 5, you have heard of the patience of Job and seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Jonah in the Bible wanted to die. He said he wished in himself to die. It's better for me to die than to live, but he didn't kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah wanted to die. There was a man in the Bible that did, an Amalekite, that did look down upon King Saul, and Saul commanded him, and he says he looked and knew that he couldn't live, so he ended the king's life, reportedly. And when he told David what he had done, David the king had him executed. So the Christian Bible teaches that life belongs to God, and other than in capital punishment where somebody has shed the blood of another, that God is the one who has the right to take life. It says in the Bible, the Lord killeth and maketh alive. He bringeth down to the grave and bringeth up. And we've just got a lot of doctors and other people playing God right now and deciding
absolutely.
That we're going to decide when you die, when it's convenient for us. And that is a dangerous situation when you give authorities the right to play God and you give them the power to kill. It's frightening.
With no repercussions.
That's right.
They can kill, and I believe that a lot of it is happening from the nurses. I'm not saying doctors are faultless, but I'm saying I believe that there are a lot of guilty nurses that don't care. You know, they're trained, this is the way we're going to do it. They don't have any feelings on it. I don't know if you have to find certain people to take that position that don't care and it doesn't bother them, but they're doing it, and they know that they can do it and get away with it because the government is turning a blind eye because they're saving money off of euthanizing instead of curing. I mean, that's what palliative care is, right?
That's exactly right. And you're always going to have people that are willing to believe. They're given a propaganda. You know, it's just a fetus. Well, what are the people that are putting elderly people to death every day? Hospicecare.com put out an article or a booklet, I believe, and they say it's a myth, this belief in the double effect of pain medication. So this is what they tell the hospice worker. The literature contains little data to support the belief that appropriate use of opioids hastens death in patients dying from cancer and other chronic diseases. So they're saying this is a myth. There's no published data that appropriate use of opioids. Well, what is an appropriate use? Where is that line? Where is the infallible statement of what is appropriate, so they can hide behind what's considered appropriate, and so much murder is taking place, and the hospice worker is being told, well, as long as we do this appropriately, it's not going to hasten death. But that goes against...
Do you think they believe that?
Oh, well, that's a hard question. probably a lot of them deep down don't at all, you know. I believe that it's just one of those things where we deceive ourselves. We don't want to admit to something because it's an inconvenient truth, you know.
It's uncomfortable to think that you actually, that your job is actually killing people.
That's right. That is right.
It, as we and go yet back they do to, it.
Some of these 19th century quotes, I have a few of them. I believe they're very important for us because you see what these hospices are saying. That they are lying to people, and they're saying none of the data out here tells us that that this morphine, you know, in these appropriate doses is dangerous. The problem is, number one, there's a lot of studies and people that have written showing that to get published today, you have to basically, there are gatekeepers many times, and if you have anything that goes against what Big Pharma or any other billion-dollar industry wants to promote, you're not going to get published. And so it's good to go back and hear what these early doctors plainly said through their own experiments. Now, people are going to bring up the idea, well, these are people from a long time ago, and so we don't have to listen to them because they're obviously wrong. You know, I think of those sea monster stories where everybody mocked and says, oh, those silly sailors, they thought that there were sea monsters that could actually take a whole ship and drown it. And then all of a sudden they discovered that there were squid so big in the 1920s and earlier, and they found out, hey, guess what? These sailors were right. All of these reports were actually right. Our forefathers weren't as stupid as we try to make out that they are. We hear about the New Zealand bird that could catch children and actually take them away and eat them. And for so many years, people mocked that, and then they found a skeleton and found out that, hey, these stories were true. Even snake oil, everybody laughs and says, you know, snake oil salesman. Well, they found out now that I wouldn't take snake oil. I think there's other things that you could take. But they found out that it actually did a lot of what they claimed it would do. So when I read these doctors, like the Annual of the University Medical Sciences and Analytic Index of 1894, it says morphine in small or large doses causes the breathing to become faster and shallower. It's generally held that this agent acts chiefly as a respiratory depressant. Recent investigators found the drug to act more as a depressant than a stimulant. And if the quantity employed is not very large, it produces an immediate arrest of respiration so severe and so permanent that in order to save an animal, artificial respiration has to be resorted to. And that's if you inject it. Surgical Journal of 1895 says it acts as a respiratory depressant. Morphine should not be used where the individual is well advanced in age. University Medical Magazine of 1893 says there are some instances on record which prove that in some people morphine produces pain. On the respiration rate, morphine is believed always to act as a depressant, diminishing it more and more in proportion to the dose, and commonly causing death by paralysis of the respiratory centers. We know it's a narcotic, it's a hypnotic, it's a cardiac and respiratory depressant. After a primary brief stimulation thereof. So according to this compend of Materia Medica, a drug reference manual of 1894, they said, well, what morphine is going to do is briefly stimulate, and then it's going to shut down the breathing. And you can go to Wikipedia right now, and it says that morphine is a chief narcotic of opium. This type of respiration is also seen after morphine administration. It produces chain stokes, which is breathing is absent for a period, then rapid for a period. Chain stokes is seen in patients with heart failure, with strokes. Well, guess what? When you give morphine to your dying loved one, it's going to produce chain stokes. Wikipedia is no friend of natural alternative medicine or anything that goes against mainstream. But they have mm-hmm. here, this type of respiration is seen after morphine administration. You're going to have chain stokes, as the 19th century physician called morphine the most dangerous of all drugs, producing morphiomaniacs, you know. So these are just a few. I have many more quotes in the link that you gave, just to show that morphine shuts down the breathing, and it's a perfect way for them to decide when the loved one dies, decide when the elderly dies, while, as you said so well, saying, oh, they look like they're in pain. And then the more morphine they give, the more raspy, the more they start the discomfort, and then they just continue till they can't breathe anymore.
And that's given to the sick and the elderly. So somebody who already has a compromised
yep.
system is
yep.
going to be given drugs that are stronger on them than they would be on someone who is younger, who's, you know, more active, who weighs more. You know, there's a lot of circumstances that a smaller amount of morphine. For instance, the lady told me when I found out they were giving Mama morphine, she said, oh, it's the same amount I gave to my 10-year-old daughter when she broke her arm. It's just a very small amount. And, of course, you believe them, but the fact is it's that small amount, and 2 hours later, that small amount, and it's with Ativan and Sentinel in
the mom's
case. I
was about to say, that's right, yeah.
Right, and then it's, again, in 2 hours, they're going to do it again. So when they gave it to your daughter one time for probably the entire time of her broken arm, and even so, if you want to give it to your 10-year-old daughter, that's your choice. You're a nurse. You know about that. That was not approved for you to give to my mama. So it just amazes me that when all of the people – you know, that I've talked to, that you've talked to, that Ron Panzer has talked to, say the same thing over and over again, that not one single attorney will go against hospice. Nobody will take that case, because the minute that you say the word hospice, in their mind, your loved one was dying, you signed the papers to put them in there, which means they're going to die less than 6 months, and that's what hospice does. That is not an acceptable solution to what's going on.
Well, look at
so
where we're
people...
at. Look what happens. look what happens if they take that case, if they start printing that, if the preacher stands up in church and says this is occurring. A lot of people have experienced this, and they do not want to face the fact that if that's so, then that means my grandfather was murdered. Maybe they're complicit in that. Maybe they don't want to look at that. But you're going to have an outcry of emotion, and we're certainly not saying in every single case. We're saying it's occurring in great numbers, far more than people realize. And it's just a truth people do not want to face, and there's a big price to pay when you try to give people a truth that makes them very uncomfortable or causes people to lose money. Either way, you are going to be, the Bible says they hate him that rebukes in the gate. And it's not a happy thing to be a messenger trying to tell people that this is occurring. But there are people out there that want to hear. There are people out there that want to save life. And they've already experienced this, like you, and if we could help anybody else not have to go through that same thing, what a blessing that would be.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I do the shows. That's why Marty has the forum and does her shows. That's why you talk about it. Ron Panzer with HPA. I mean, that's why we're all out here trying to hit different audiences to try to spread the word, because I didn't know anything about it, and you didn't know anything about it until it happened to us personally, and then you're in such shock that you can't believe I just, like you said, I just witnessed a murder.
Yes.
And sadly, you know, I've talked to people, and they've heard what I said, and then a week or two, a month or two, their loved one dies. They come back. They say, tell me again. And I say what I said, you know, and tell them what happened to my mom. And they'll say, those are the same words that the doctor said to me. That's the same thing the nurse said. Those are the same drugs that my dad was given. So they, when you tell somebody this, unfortunately, it appears that unless somebody goes through it personally, they are not able to identify with us and to say, you know, I know that Marsha's a level-headed person and she wouldn't be telling me this if it wasn't true. So when you meet people on the street or in your neighborhood, yes?
Yeah, Marsha, you have a caller on here from area code 719. You're
okay.
Live and on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Marsha or our guest, Pastor Faust? They just dropped. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, but if somebody does have a question, please hit one and you'll be cued in. But the only thing is you can only tell somebody something and hope that they believe you, and that what we don't want is for them to have to go through what we went through. If somebody had told me this before my mom, even before we enrolled her in hospice, and had we known that, we wouldn't have. And when they did, you know, morphine and Ativan, and they twisted our arm to start her back up, we wouldn't have. We would have called an ambulance, picked her up from the death wing, and brought her home, or taken her to Houston County Medical Hospital and taken her out of Perry, Georgia. Had we known that this is what was going to happen, that she would be slowly, cruelly euthanized, we'd have removed her from that. But nobody told us that. So you and I, Ron, and other people are trying to warn all of our listeners in any way that we can. We don't want you to go through what we went through.
Well, what they're preying upon is the fact that nobody wants to see their relative suffer. Nobody wants to see their relative, their loved one, in pain. But what we have to make sure is that the pain isn't manufactured by drugs. So then they can just give more drugs until they kill your loved one. Depending on the disease or manner of dying, all dying does not cause pain that we are aware of. Just looking through the Bible, it says Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man, full of years. Isaac gave up the ghost and was gathered into his people. I have stories of preachers like Robert Govett in the 19th century. He died singing hymns to God. So many of these people, whatever pain they were experiencing, they were with their loved ones. They were giving last words to their family all throughout the Bible and all throughout the centuries. What of the remorse and apologies and repentance and all of these precious times that are being masked by these drugs, these painkillers? And I'm not against every painkiller. I'm just saying, when you're putting somebody on a narcotic and that's basically shutting down their respiratory and causing them to be delirious, how can they communicate with you? How can they let you know they're in pain? And then you just have some hospice worker who comes up after smoking a cigarette and says, oh, she looks like she's in pain, give her more drugs. No, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That is not right. That is not right. It says Rachel, when her soul was departing and she was dying, she called her son's name Benoni. So she was able to name her baby as she's dying. It says Stephen in the Bible, calling upon God, said, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit, as they were murdering him. He wasn't on a narcotic seat. And people say, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, for centuries, the Chinese, the Greeks, people in the Bible, they use the willow tree to help pain. They use frankincense as a powerful, it was brought to baby Jesus, to the Lord Jesus, when he was young. They brought, the wise men brought gold and silver and frankincense. It was a powerful, it still is today, anti-inflammatory. It has so many blessings to it. But
well, it frankincense is the one oil that is able to break the pain barrier. And if you actually, if you take frankincense oil, and it has to be pure, but if you put it up in the roof of your mouth with your thumb and push in, it will relieve pain. So, yes, there are things that they can do to stop the pain. And also I read, I heard, I'm not sure if it was on your YouTube, where or someone was saying that they, when they realized that their mother was getting anxious and they wanted to come in and get her Ativan, that they would show her pictures of her grandchildren, and they would talk to her and just hold her hand and get her mind off of that, and she would start breathing easier. And, you know, that every time that the nurse, the first thing they wanted to do is give her morphine. And this son said, why don't we find out what the reason is? What, you know, Mom, are you in pain? Are you anxious? And they would show pictures and calm her down, and she would be fine, and she wouldn't need the morphine. But that's not what hospice is doing. They just, it makes it easier for them because they give them the morphine and they're just crashed, and you can walk down the hall and just see people laying with their mouth open because they're all in a sedated state and they're going to die. And that's what hospice is doing.
There are so many natural alternatives. That's a wonderful point you're making. Other than just herbs and natural alternatives, there's other things outside of medicine that you could do to calm people and relieve pain. But like here's from the BBC in 2003. Scientists have developed a natural alternative to morphine that appears to be as effective at killing pain but with fewer side effects. Here's Science Daily from 2016. Researchers at Tulane University in Louisiana have developed a painkiller that is as strong as morphine but isn't addictive, according to the journal Neuropharmacology. Opium-based drugs are the leading treatments for severe and chronic pain, but they can be highly addictive. Their abuse results in thousands of overdose deaths in the United States annually. I guess what I'm trying to say is there are alternatives. Not everybody is in pain at death, and I just think it's a terrible thing to bring about pain through morphine or whatever other opiate and then claim that the person is in pain so you can give them more till you finally shut down the breathing. And it needs to be exposed. And you're going to be called names. You're going to be hated. You're going to be called reactionary. You're going to be called foolish. But we just have to continue to sound the alarm. People will see. People will understand, and people will wake up. It'll be just like other controversial issues. It just takes time. But meanwhile, they're going to try to shut you down. They're going to try to use propaganda to make you look foolish.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think now with the pro-life, the anti-abortion movement, and I think when Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia came out and said that they were going to let a baby sit there and determine whether or not the mother wanted it to live or die, and they would make that determination, I think America was shocked. For the first time, I think people started to see the baby as a baby and not just an unwanted, you know, I don't want to have a child, and use that as birth control. But they're starting to see that, and I think now is the time where we need to be very focused on letting people know it's not just pro-life, it's not just the abortion that is the issue, it is on the other end. Every time I see a Facebook article about abortion and people, you know, saying this state, you know, like Georgia, for instance, which I'm very proud of, that Georgia stood up and said we're not going to allow abortion here. It's going to be considered a felony. And I comment on every one of those, yes, I agree with this, but also to let all of those people know, what about euthanizing, stealth euthanizing our elderly people, because it is happening. And then I put Ron Panzer's hospicepatient.org on there so that they can see that. And we're talking about when you have articles that are newspaper articles and people post, there are a lot more people reading those than our individual groups. So that goes to thousands, and I make the comment on every single one of them and tell them about euthanizing our elders and put Ron Panzer's site there so they can see for themselves. It's not just me saying it. It's not just Ron saying it. It's not just you. It's not just Marty. People are saying it across the United States, across the country. We have some people that Marty has on her show, I believe from Australia. And, you know, we have Canada. We have shows with Canada. So it is happening across the country. None of us are immune to this. It is coming, and if we're not aware of it, we're going to repeat history, just like you said earlier with the Nazi concentration camps, with gassing. They're doing it with morphine and Ativan, Haldol, and the other drugs. We're in it. It's not. It's happening. I just can't believe that we are this far in it. And, you know, occasionally we hear stories about it and a little bit of snippet of this and that, but it's not on major media. They're not talking about it like they are right now about, you know, pro-life, and that's where we need to be, side by side.
Well, the more we
Marcia,
sound the
can
alarm.
Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
You know, my sister just passed here about a week and a half ago. And Pastor Foss, what you just described about the administration of morphine and what it does to the breathing is exactly what was observed by my sister and niece as they administered morphine to my sister. Now, she was critically ill, mm-hmm. but the rapid breathing followed by the slow, shallow, slowing breathing. They administered
yes,
more, and she left. I was listening to this, and in her case, I will say this in defense of the people, they probably did the most merciful thing for her in the condition she was in. But they did not tell the family that's what they were doing. They used that excuse of she's in pain, she looks like she's in pain. She was not in hospice, she was in the hospital. But the same dialogue and exactly to the T what you just described about what this medication does, how it works, and what you can observe happening as a result of it being administered. And I want to thank you for speaking about that out loud. People need to know what they are witnessing.
Yes, yes, indeed. I'm so sorry about your sister and that you had to see that, and I'm sure that was hard to deal with.
It was, but thank you for bringing that out. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Marcia.
Oh.
I just had to.
Oh, no, no, Marty, not at all. No, absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'll back out now.
That's okay, Marty. That's okay. And again, we are very very sorry about your sister. It's been a tough couple of weeks for you. One of the things that you said, Pastor Joey, back a little bit ago, was when they are administering this and the family members, as Marty just said, they did not tell them that that's what was going to happen. Now, Marty is smarter than the average person, and, you know, she's been doing these shows and has more information, but they still should be telling people. And by doing this, one of the attorneys that I had gone out and I looked for wrongful death, and one of the attorney sites talked about, you know, if you lost, you know, your loved one's, you know, financial stability, because they're talking about, you know, what they would go sue for, et cetera, which I'm not interested in that. But what they did talk about was if they stole the last memories, the last hours, the last days of your loved one's life. Those were things that you didn't get to say to your loved ones. In my case, that I didn't get to tell my mom. Mm. And I know that my mom knew and knows that I love her. But we didn't get to say goodbye. We didn't get to talk to her. She didn't get to say things to us. She didn't even know we were in the room. And this particular attorney's office said on their website that this is one of the things they sued for, the emotional, you know, what it does to an individual, the emotional loss that you have. It's not just a monetary, it's emotional. But even they would not take the case because it's hospice. And when you're in the hospital and the same thing happens to the individual, they still, I have a lot of, you know, friends that I've met through this, and they still don't take their case, even though they were in the hospital and hospice wasn't necessarily involved in all cases, but they don't take that. And that's something, it's not a monetary thing. It's you stole the last days, the last weeks, the last months, because, again, they don't know when you're really going to die. Only God knows that. And they steal that time from the family members and from that person that they euthanize. There's no amount that you can put on that. That's a precious life taken from that individual and all of their family members. There's no price you can put on that. And you relive it every day, every night, of watching your loved one die just the way that you said. And you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, it's here now. And with that whole, you know, back in 2013, that Dr. Brian J. Kopp, he wrote what I believe is an excellent statement, article about Obamacare. And he says, we know that stealth euthanasia is here, that it is essentially legally protected already, and its prevalence is going to explode. Looking at the opposite end of the life spectrum from abortion, there is cause for grave concern. The overall picture today does not reflect the roots of hospice philosophy. Of the 1.5 million who die annually under hospice care, a growing number are dying premature deaths due to stealth euthanasia, primarily via over medication, terminal sedation, and withdrawal of hydration and nutrition. Furthermore, hospice Medicare fraud is soaring. Most of the large corporate hospice providers have been accused of millions, and in some cases billions of dollars in insurance fraud, often certifying patients for hospice care who are not actually dying, while profit-driven negligence in patient care has hastened the death of many. Because death records never list over-medication, terminal sedation, deliberate dehydration, or neglect as the immediate cause of death, it's very difficult to obtain concrete data regarding the number of those dying in such circumstances. Many in the hospice and palliative care field are trying to make terminal sedation the standard of care. Those who are terminally sedated cannot take food and water, and the end-of-life care industry rarely provides assisted nutrition and hydration. As terminal sedation becomes more prevalent, the number of those dying by euthanasia will increase
steadily. The Independent Payment Advisory Board, the death panel being instituted under the ACA that Sarah Palin warned us about, will be tasked with rationing health care spending and making life and death decisions for enrollees. During the 2008 presidential campaign, Obama telegraphed where health care rationing is headed when he said that the elderly needed to be encouraged to forego expensive care in the last years of their life, choosing instead palliative or hospice care. Stealth euthanasia will become the norm. Most laws that directly prohibit physician-assisted suicide protect physicians who use opioids, sedatives, and antipsychotics for pain management or alleviation of agitation, might also hasten death. Thus, stealth euthanasia under cover of law is little different than the outright legalization of abortion through 9 months of pregnancy that was a result of Roe v. Wade. And he concludes by saying, as the total number of surgical abortions has dropped, the number of stealth euthanasia cases has rapidly increased. As the total percentage of those who die in the U.S. within the context of hospice climbs and the culture accepts the general practice of stealth euthanasia, we could see death by euthanasia surpass death by abortion within a generation. It's urgent that we build the pro-life infrastructure necessary to provide ethical alternatives to euthanasia. But you have Soros and all of these others behind all of this. There's big money, and that's why this thing is protected, as he said. It's being legally protected.
Now, who was that that you said, Brian J. Cox?
Yes, yes, Dr. Brian J. Cox. K-O-P-P.
Okay. Can you send that to me? That's very, very powerful.
Sure, I
will.
Like I thought
share
so.
That. Yeah, yes. that's very powerful. He just kind of lays it out, and that is exactly where we headed, and that's where we are. And something you just mentioned, that George Soros has put a ton, he's one of the major people that promotes hospice, with funding.
That's
so
right. That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, people wonder. There was a former Kaiser doctor, Dr. Charles Philip, who said morphine is like a loaded gun, powerful to lower blood pressure and stop breathing. And it mimics the morphine toxicity, as you said, or the morphine poisoning mimics dying. I remember them telling us, they kept coming in and looking at my mom's fingernails and toenails and around her lips looking for bluing, and morphine toxicity does that.
That's exactly right.
So,
yes, indeed.
And they tell you, yes, and they tell you that, you know, that's what they're looking for, and in their little pamphlet, their little hospice pamphlet, which it tells you the signs to look for, those are one of the signs to look for, and yet, as Wikipedia, morphine causes bluing on your fingertips and your toes. I mean, so it mimics the dying process. It mimics pain, and yet it is the one drug that is used for every single patient that hospice wants to murder. And if there was another drug that was more powerful and they could do that stealth-wise, they would do that. They have no conscience, moral, or ethics. It's
well,
just amazing to
me. That's a very good point, that it mimics death, and so that's why they use it. I mean, right down to the lips, the breathing, the coldness, the coma, I mean, everything. So it sure is a perfect drug, and all their other opioids and everything that they use. And, you know, this Soros fella and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and all these others, they make it look like a grassroots campaign, you know, that we're for this compassion and choices, you know, that they call abortion a choice. We're for choice. We're for compassion. Well, they're doing the same thing with this euthanasia. And right now, it's stealth euthanasia, and it's involuntary.
And it traces its roots back to this Euthanasia Society of America back in the 30s. And they call it choice in dying, you know, and that type of thing through the years. Ron Panzer, who you've had on, I believe, his book Stealth Euthanasia is so important. It's a deep read, but it's a very, very important read as he goes through so much of this. And we're trying to get this documentary going at that hospicedoc.com, and we really want to get as many interviews as we can to people to tell their story and talk to as many experts and nurses and doctors as we can, and we just want to blow this thing wide open. You know, we really do, and praise God for the work you're doing right now.
Well, it may be minimal, but I think the more I think Ron Panzer had said this when he was on the show back in April, that if you tell everybody, just, you know, when you meet people, if the opportunity presents itself, tell them, and if you tell somebody else, if you tell 10 people and they tell 10 people and they tell 10 people, then eventually, you know, you're reaching masses and you're doing it slowly. But if everybody who is listening to us now made a point, tell people, you know, it had to be 10, but, you know, everybody that you get the chance to talk to, I mean, I keep cards with me, and when I, you know, walk my pups around the block or when I'm at the store or at Sam's tasting, you know, everybody knows me, and they know that what the dangers are, because I think it's important, especially when I see elderly people, I try to work it into the conversation because they're going to be victimed next, and it's sad. Because they don't have any way of knowing that. And if they don't have a family member that knows that, they don't have anybody to protect them, because they're not going to tell you what this drug is going to do to you. They're just going to start doing it, and then you're gone. Your family won't have a chance to talk to you.
From reports that I hear a lot of, even in hospitals, there is this killing that takes place, and a lot of times it happens at night when the family members aren't present. At other times it happens right in front of the family members, and they just say, we're relieving pain and what we've been discussing. But a lot of times at night, you know, when the family member's not there, you'll get a report that, well, in the middle of the night they took a bad turn, and we've heard of nurses that have actually called family members and friends and said, you better get to the hospital because, and they're basically whistleblowing. You know, they're saying if somebody doesn't get up here near him, you know, they didn't come out and say it, but they're implying that if you know of anybody that knows this person, you better get somebody here, because if not, they're just going to move him through the system, you know. So people just don't want to believe this is happening. But it is happening so much.
And like you say, a lot of times it happens at nighttime when there's nobody there from the family with the individual. And there was one lady who was in Texas with the Nova situation, and she was bragging about the fact that she was called the closer, and that when she came in, before she left her shift, that she would roll them on their side. That would do the trick. They would moan. She'd give them more morphine. And she said, rarely do I ever leave, and they're still alive. I'm the closer. I read another article that a guy, this young girl is talking about it. It's kind of a really touching story. I'll send it to you. But she was talking about how she was in there, and this elderly lady kept talking to her, but, you know, she was kind of gruff to begin with, but then she liked this young girl. But this guy came in, and they called him Handy Andy. And they would talk about this elderly woman because she wasn't, you know, she was kind of grumpy, and they just didn't like her, and so they didn't treat her like she was a person. As it turned out, she was a very rich person, and she had an attorney. But this guy came in, and the young girl had seen him there, and she says, what's that? Oh, that's Handy Andy. He'll take care of it. He's the one that comes in and takes care of the people that we're having issues with. And the next day, the elderly lady was gone. Now, in this particular situation, she willed to this young girl a tremendous amount of money through her attorney, because this young girl was the only girl that ever talked to her and spent any time with her. And the other nurses just thought she was grumpy, and they had the guy come in and kill her. And she had been trying to contact her son and let her son know that this is, that they're going to kill me. And her son did not care. He was in on it. So he didn't
I'm sure that happens a lot.
Her money. Yes. And I'm sure he didn't get the money. I have another lady that I spoke to. Hopefully she'll be coming on the show later. But her situation is in the hospital with neglect. And I believe she has an attorney, and her case is moving forward. And so she has got some traction. And hopefully, you know, in weeks, months ahead, you know, how long Supreme Court takes, but hopefully in months ahead, she will have won. And, you know, it's not a monetary thing with her either. It's a thing, my mom was neglected in the hospital. They could have done something. And fortunately, there was a nurse there who, you know, kind of gave her information. We have another one of our guests that was on, I believe, my very first show, Lisa Ann, somebody had contacted her and told her, you better get down here, just like what you said. And she says, I think your dad needs help. Well, she wound up calling 911 to get him, to get somebody in there to save her dad. And eventually, after her dad actually was murdered, the police came after her because they said she made a call and she didn't identify who she was. She said she was someone else because she knew if she said who she was, they wouldn't come. Now, after, you know, because the hospice had done wrong and had murdered her dad, they withdrew all the charges. And so she wasn't charged with that. But that is exactly what happens. And if you do have a nurse there who is compassionate enough, has morals and values, and she lets you know, then by all means, get down there. But we were physically with my mom the entire time. I drove down with my pups, had my pups in the room with her, and we stayed with her. But they still did it because they convinced us she was in pain. And,
oh yeah!
You know,
they know what to say to you, and
they do.
They know how to. And even if you protest it, in many of these situations, they have adult protective services. We've lost liberty in America. You know, it's a separate issue, but it's very related. That medicine has been taken over largely in America to where you cannot be a doctor unless you are licensed. And you have to conform to the pharmaceutical companies and sell what they want you to sell and have their philosophy to be a recognized doctor today. People don't understand. You can take a child, a teenage boy, into the hospital. I witnessed this with my own eyes. I saw somebody bring a teenage boy into the hospital, and had an appendicitis, I believe it was, and they wanted him to have surgery. And whatever it was, they were saying in the UK that the doctors were more and more deciding against that type of surgery. But instead of giving the parents the right to make that decision, they basically said, well, here's the deal. If you do not go along with it, we are going to go get the police. And so pretty much you are forced to have this surgery. Well, they're going to do the same thing with the elderly, see, and they are doing it. We'll call adult protective services or whatever it is, and you are going to be in trouble, and we'll call the police, and, or you know, so you are being forced to go along with this. I believe it was H.G. Wells that said, we're first going to control by propaganda, But if that doesn't work anymore, we'll use force. You know, so these people that are pushing this euthanasia, they're controlling you by propaganda, but it's 1984, you know, as well. Not only Aldous Huxley's book, Controlling a Brave New World, controlling by propaganda, it's also controlling by this authoritarian, totalitarian force of this medical system. And the only thing we can do is try to awaken people, pray to God, and repent and pray He'll heal our land, and try to spread this, the value of life and truth, and do everything we can. Because I'm looking down at a headline right now. It says the world's leading euthanasia advocate designs a death pod. Dr. Sarko has this cotton-like, coffin-like pod that people climb in that replaces your oxygen with nitrogen, killing you instantly. Well, the more this euthanasia, voluntary euthanasia, is accepted, the more involuntary euthanasia continues to grow, and you're going to be guilt-manipulated. The elderly person is going to be guilt. They already are being guilt manipulated to sign the do not resuscitate and all of this. You don't want to suffer. You don't want to have your loved ones see this, you know. And so everybody, you don't want to do this to your dad, to your mom, you know. They're suffering. So everybody's being guilt manipulated to play God, to go along with it. And where there's money, you're going to have people that will willfully go along with it. See what happens to families when there's an inheritance. People that got along and love one another suddenly just become these, they'll murder. They will steal, they will betray one another for a few thousand dollars. And so when there's an inheritance, nobody wants to wait for grandpa to die, you know, in many of these cases. So what a sad situation.
That's very tragic that someone would feel that way about you, that just to get rid of you. If my son is listening, don't even try it with me.
Yes, indeed.
Not that I'm worried about that.
The Bible says in the last days, perilous times shall come. They'll be lovers of their self. They're going to be selfish. And they're not going to have natural affection, it says in 2 Timothy 3. So. It predicted this time, Marcia.
It did. And a lot of people, you know, talk about, you know, what happens next. And, you know, we're kind of imploding upon ourselves. And, you know, I look at the World War, my dad's a World War II veteran, and I look at the World War II veterans and what they have, the knowledge they have, and the things they could tell us. But we're getting to the point where we just want to kill off all of the old people. And who are you going to have left? For one thing, who's going to do the work and tell the stories about what was in, you know, and if we start wiping out history books and saying that, oh, that didn't, you know, the Holocaust didn't happen, then where's our history? And we're going to repeat it.
Oh, that is another powerful point. That is right, because they do have control of the textbooks, and they are rewriting the history books.
Right.
And these old people,
history.
They're drugging these old people. They are euthanizing them involuntarily. And you're right. There goes our history.
And they're giving them dementia with the drugs. So I think we have
indeed.
About 65 seconds left. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. You've given us a lot of information. As I said earlier, you're a dynamic speaker. And thank you so much for coming on and being understanding while we had a few of our glitches. And to all of our listeners, thank you for calling in and listening to us. Hopefully you were able to get in. And Marty, thank you very much for having the show. I'll give you the last 30 seconds.
Well, this has absolutely been a stunning show, and Pastor Faust, I would like to get you on my show and recommend you also to another show host who I'm sure would love to hear what you have to say. Marcia, this had to have been the best show you've done so far. This was the most informative, and you do an excellent interview. Pastor, thank you for laying this out for everybody. For everybody that tuned in tonight.
Thank you all for having me.
No, we're going to have you back.
Well, you are a blessing.
We're out of time, and we will see you all in 2 weeks again on Betrayed by Hospice, and hopefully things will be straightened out by then. So good night, everyone, and thanks for tuning in.
All right. Thank you again, Pastor Joey.